This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
BFM 89.9, you're listening to The Morning Run with Lin Mark, Ku Su Chuang and Wang Xiaoning. It is 7:07 in the morning. What a lovely sunrise on this Thursday, the 10th of October. And Asian stocks were mixed yesterday. So the Shanghai Composite closed up 0.4%, then the South Korean Kospi rose 1.2%, while those in the red included the Hang Seng down 0.8% and the Straits Times down 0.8% as well, the Nikkei down 0.6% and our very own KLCI down 0.5%.
Extending an 8.2% year-to-date decline. Oh my good lord. Anyway, over in the US, those stocks rose as investors awaited the resumption of US-China trade talks, and they're looking for fresh signals from Jerome Powell on monetary easing. The Dow was up nearly 1%, or 0.7% specifically. The S&P was up 0.9%. The Nasdaq climbed 1%. The gains were broad. All 11 sectors of the S&P were rising, led by technology stocks, no less.
Meanwhile, tensions between US and China appeared to have intensified this week as the US imposed export restrictions on more than two dozen Chinese firms and put visa restrictions on Chinese officials. However, market observers overnight pointed to optimism on the trade front as Bloomberg reported that China was open to reaching a partial deal.
Interesting. Now, we'll be keeping an eye out on Asian markets later when they open up to see how they react. But in the meantime, for more on global markets, we speak to Tony Nash this morning, Chief Economist and CEO of Complete Intelligence. Thank you for joining us, Tony. Now, China has apparently signaled that they are open to a partial trade deal with the US as a delegation heads to Washington later this week. But do you see a positive outcome? And has this been priced in by markets?
Yeah, look, we don't really see a deal coming out. What China's put on the table is what they've put on the table before, and it's things like buying agriculture goods and so on, which they actually need. So it's not really anything new. It's it's things to keep their population fed. And if they're not going to change on intellectual property and they're not going to change on some of the core complaints that the U.S. has had, there's really not going to be a deal in place.
Tony, in Hong Kong, the protests have taken on a more violent tone. What does this mean for the Asian Financial Center? And are there any ramifications on the Chinese economy?
No, we've been saying for about a month or so that Hong Kong's days as a global financial center are numbered because when you put billions of dollars into a financial center, you want stability, you want predictability, low volatility, and Hong Kong just doesn't offer that anymore. Once there was arson in the streets, once they started building homemade catapults, it really changed the structure. So we think that a lot of that financial services activity, insurance activity in Hong Kong is going to flow off to other Asian financial centers, depending on their expertise. And some of it will flow to China. Some of it will go to Shanghai. Some of it will go to Shenzhen. But we think that Hong Kong in 5 years will be, 5 to 10 years will be kind of a shadow of what it's been in the past.
And then looking at Chinese data, manufacturing PMI unexpectedly rose 51.4 in September from 50.4 in August. Now, the latest reading is actually the strongest pace we've seen since Feb 2018. So does this mean the Chinese economy has seen the worst of the effects of the US-China trade tensions?
Yeah, we don't really put much credibility in those data. We've been talking to folks who've been visiting Chinese factories, and especially in the electronics sector. What we're told is that electronics factories are down 30% year on year. So when we see a PMI number of 51.4, it's really hard for us to put any faith in that. We think things in China are much worse than that. So has China seen the worst of the U.S.-China trade tensions? I'm not quite sure about that. I wouldn't go that far. But I think the issues in the domestic Chinese economy are much worse and much bigger than any trade tensions that China would be seeing.
And Tony, the latest data also from the IMF has shown a subtle shift in global central bank reserves from U.S. dollars to other currencies and even gold. What does this mean for the U.S. dollar versus other major currencies in the long term? Will it gradually depreciate despite the current positive carry?
We don't see the U.S. dollar depreciating in the near term or even the medium term. And the real issue is, if you look at the stock of U.S. dollar denominated debt globally, it's not possible for companies or central banks to really move much away from the U.S. dollar. So we actually see the dollar appreciating pretty dramatically over the next few years. It'll make things in emerging markets pretty difficult, given the debt stock and given the activities. So we're, you know, we're trying to make sure, or we're looking at that and seeing central bank stocks through that lens.
Thank you so much, Tony. And that was Tony Nash, Chief Economist and CEO of Complete Intelligence, with some optimistic news on the US dollar there for us emerging markets. But it was interesting he pointed out that he doesn't actually have much faith in the data coming out of China, the fact that their manufacturing PMI rose 1 point between September and August.
Cool. Yeah, he also kind of highlighted that maybe there are actually bigger concerns on the domestic economy, whether things will get worse on the ground in China versus all this external trade, actually.
Who here in this room believes the data that emanates from China?
Cool. I think, honestly, global data, and it's not just China, it always surprises me, because sometimes you wonder how fast can they accumulate all this data, and is how accurate is it? Is it really a reflection of a current economic situation? And some of it is lagging, right?
Right. So in one single number, GDP, you capture the entire country's productivity and economy. How can that be possible? It's not possible.
So sometimes you do wonder, especially for a very big economy like the US, right? Is that number really accurate and reflective of how things are?
All you have to do is just look at Donald Trump, right? Any picture will do. And ask yourself, do I believe this man?
But this morning, moving from macroeconomics to corporate taxation, also the OECD has proposed a global shakeup of corporate taxes. And this is overturning a century of rules that have allowed digital groups like the Facebook, Apple, Amazon, Netflix and Google to shift profits around the world in order to minimize their tax bills. And the proposals are aimed at extracting more corporate tax from multinationals, whether they are digital or own highly profitable brands like luxury goods makers or even global car companies.
Yeah, so the idea is for a whole bunch of countries to sign up to this agreement and basically not allow taxes to be confined to the domicile of where they do the business. So if you're domiciled in, say, for example, Ireland, and you do some business in Malaysia, you can tax that transaction because that's where you're doing the business, even though you're domiciled in Ireland. And of course, the winners would be any countries which is basically seeing the subject of that conglomerate's adorations, whether it's the US, China, Hong Kong, even Malaysia, Singapore, Indonesia, Thailand, right?
Yeah, but basically the winners will be those large countries, right? So you're talking like UK, China, and like Germany, right?
Which is the biggest markets and the wealthiest markets.
But then the losers would be the companies themselves, tax havens, and low-tax jurisdictions such as Ireland, actually.
Exactly.
But I mean, a lot of these tax rules were written before the internet really became the behemoth that it actually is. So I think rather than seeing it as the companies losing out with the introduction of these rulings, it's more that you are actually now going to have to pay those dues that you got away with escaping from all of these years because the legislation was just not up to par.
Do you know how much cash Apple has on the balance sheet? Do you know how much cash Google has on its balance sheet?
100 billion.
Apple has got maybe three times that.
Yeah, right? I know it's a lot. Right? Yeah, and they do daily buybacks.
They've already been buying back and giving back to shareholders. But that's the reason why their margins are so fat, is because they are so clever. They've got a whole battery of lawyers to exactly advise them on this business.
Basically, at this rate, with this new proposal from the OECD, you don't have to be physically present in a country in order to be taxed by that country for services rendered.
So the OECD wants, basically, individual countries to not go down the individual digital tax route. Like, for example, Malaysia's discussing this now, right?
Yep.
They want everybody to sign up to this agreement and then let's do...
Like a global framework.
Let's do this, or a monopoly, or a cabal, right? Depends on how you look at it.
All right, but right now we are heading into a few messages and then we'll be back to talk to you about some local stories next. So be sure to stay tuned to BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.